You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
When I go to the mall and I go to the Dior store and I want something, I get it. I ask how much it costs and I buy it. So if you really want something, just go get it. So, yeah, I mean, that's... I'm the product here, and if they want my product, you know, they just got to come get it.
Yeah, and sometimes you shop in the Dior store, and sometimes you shop in the Dior outlet store, you know, and you get really nice things for a considerably better price, like
it's
Carlos Correa.
Rack. He went to Dior Rack, and there was a rebate, a $33 million rebate. I said, hey, okay, well, we'll buy your Correa back from you, but yeah, you're going to have to give us $33 million in credit card credit or something like that, or store credit. We got store credit.
That's right. Yeah, Seth, Jim Crane got a push notification. He got a text yesterday like I get from Academy when they have a flash sale, and they're like, look, you got till 5 o'clock this afternoon, and you're going to get 33% off of a very, very talented shortstop, but you got to do it by 5.
Right.
You got to do it by 5 o'clock.
And that's exactly what it was like. You race down to the store in Minnesota there, and you pick up a Carlos Correa, which I got way more excited about than I thought I was going to.
I did too.
I was trying to be so cool beforehand. I did this with Bregman too, and I knew it when they were talking about potentially still signing Bregman even after the trade that brought Paredes in. I was like, okay, I'm feeling at the time like, nah, we don't need it. We've moved on. But I knew as soon as if they had signed Bregman back, I would be super ecstatic.
Yeah.
This one caught me even more by surprise.
Yeah.
Partly because so many people around baseball were saying, nah, probably not going to happen. Nah, the Astros want too much. Nah, Jim Crane's not going to go over the luxury tax into the luxury tax for the second time in a row. And lo and behold, as Jim Crane is wont to do with the trade deadline, he damn well, every now and then at the trade deadline, Jim Crane says, that's it. I want that purse from the Dior store. And I'm gonna get it.
I want that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't even check with his wife, I heard. He just said, nope.
I want this Correa. Ask for forgiveness
later. Got the text alert on his phone, said, is this you? Just being sure this isn't fraud. And he said, yes, it's me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm with you. That to me is the A number one story with all this. And I guess for those of you who may have missed it, Carlos Correa is an Astro once again at the trade deadline, about 2 hours before the trade deadline yesterday. The news came down about Correa returning to Houston. It took forever for the details to come out. I don't know why. But about an hour later is when we saw that the Twins are picking up $33 million of the around $100 million left on Correa's contract. He's got 3 years left after this year. So Carlos Correa, we're at a place now, Seth, with Carlos Correa that a lot of Astro fans hoped we would be when he hit free agency in 2021. When the Astros made him a 5-year, $160 million offer, he leaves and goes to the Twins on that 1-year prove-it deal. Then he hits free agency again and gets not one, but two $300 million deals from the Giants and the Mets that both get voided, and he goes back to Minnesota on a 6-year, $200 million deal. And now he's an Astro once again, where the Astros are basically paying around, if I do the math, $20 million, $20 plus, a little over $20 million a year for the next 3 years for Carlos Correa. Jim Crane is really, really good at allowing very expensive things to leave and then finding them at a garage sale 3 years later at about 60% of the price.
It's what the Patriots did forever. Guys would leave, and then lo and behold, a year or two later, they'd come back and be playing really well for the Patriots. So the Astros obviously don't need to. Back in the day, you might say, "Well, I hope the Astros or the Texans operate the way the Patriots did when they were so good." I mean, the Astros set the standard in a lot of ways for how to operate aggressively but intelligently. And you and I were talking about before the show. I mean, Jim Crane might be the ideal owner in terms of how the fan base can relate to him, and that he operates the team kind of like a fan, a smart, responsible, a fiscally responsible fan, but that all, you know, tries to say, no, we got to be careful, and then all of a sudden says, screw it, we're going to go for it. Well, and no, we got to do it this year. Okay, yeah, screw the future. We're not going to have gusto. Fine. It's just almost become like clockwork now that you can depend on, more likely than not, something really crazy and cool happening at the trade deadline.
Verlander, Greinke, Verlander again, and now Carlos Correa. And
Verlander,
here's the
second time when the Mets were paying so much of his salary.
Which is especially a lot like this, which is where I was going to go for a second, which is if there's a criticism of Jim Crane as an owner, I would say that one is a very specific one, which is he allowed the team to be run by a non-GM for about a month, and they made some horrible decisions. That's water under the bridge now. You know, Abreu's gone, Montero's gone, Brantley, you know, like whatever. The other criticism, I think, or the other times where people get upset with Jim Crane is when he doesn't spend big to keep his own guys. Gerrit Cole leaves, George Springer leaves, Carlos Correa leaves, Justin Verlander leaves, and I think what we've seen now, Seth, with the deadline 2 years ago with Verlander coming back and now with this deal with Correa, is that by and large those have been very good decisions to let these guys walk. You know, Gerrit Cole is in the middle of rehabbing a Tommy John, and granted he's won a Cy Young, he's been good for the Yankees, and George Springer's been up and down for the Blue Jays, but staying out of that high ticket free agency has been a big reason why the Astros have been able to sustain this thing, because it's not like they haven't been bumping up against the competitive balance tax, or in the case of the last 2 years, been over it while letting these guys walk. I mean, he's still spending a lot of money, and Carlos Gray ain't going to be cheap, but at three, what essentially amounts to 3 years, $22-23 million a year to probably play third base for this team, at least for this year and probably, you know, next year, depending on what they end up doing with Peña over the next couple of years. I like the deal, if for no other reason, and you hit it right out of the chute. This is an energy jolt. This is a really cool feel-good thing. I don't know. You may have felt a certain way about whether they should do this deal with the money or this or that, and I felt that way. Like, people were like, should they go get Correa? I'm like, I don't know. Tell me the terms of the deal, and then I'll tell you if they should do it, because this has everything to do with how much you're spending on him and what you're giving up. I want to be there the night that he returns to Daikin Park on Monday the 11th against the Red Sox to be part of that reaction for Carlos Correa return, regardless of how you feel about the deal. It's really cool having him back on this baseball team.
Yeah, no, I think the injection of energy is a very real thing. And that's, you could be cynical about that or whatever it might be, but we've just seen on this team through the golden era how much it mattered when guys like George Springer were around in the dugout. Alex Bregman's effect, you know, they're finding out in Boston just how valuable he is to the younger guys. And Carlos Correa, really, by the time he left, had transformed into a veteran leader and a guy that had the Astros DNA in him and all of that. And it works out. It's even better in that, you know, if you're wondering about whether Correa was going to play second, the shortstop or third base, turns out that he's wanted to play third base for a while now. They just hadn't been able to get one there for the Twins to take the shortstop reins. So he just settles seamlessly into playing third base while your shortstop of the future can be mentored by Carlos Correa. It's a really cool situation.
It's cool, and it's cool, too, when you talk about mentoring, that there's a mentoring aspect with Correa to Jeremy Peña. And I know we have some fun with that audio that when Correa returned to Minute Maid for the first time and he's talking to the media about, you know, it made it sound like he discovered Jeremy Peña. We have some fun with that audio, but the fact of the matter is that in that year or two where they overlapped, at least being in spring training together, you know, where Pena was still part of the minor league team, but the big league ball club and the minor leaguers would cross-pollinate sometimes, that Correa was very much a mentor to Pena then. The two work out in the offseason now. It's going to be, but they've never played in a big league game together. You know, went from Correa being a near MVP to the next season, Pena being an amazing rookie who was the actual MVP in the postseason for the Astros that year in the ALCS and the World Series. It's going to be, Pena's supposed to return tonight. Correa, before leaving the Twins, missed a game, I think, because of migraine. So we'll see what the deal is. Carlos is going to be with the team in Boston. Whether he plays tonight or not, it's not been made clear. Whenever that first game is, whether it's tonight or tomorrow, and seeing Carlos Correa and Jeremy Pena jogging out onto the field at the same time to take that side of the infield together is going to feel a little bit surreal. You know,
it's going to be really cool. And the other part of it with Correa is, you know, people will point out, hey, he's not having a great year. He's been up and down. He's had one bad month, one good month.
Yeah,
it's playoffs, Correa. I mean, that's one of the reasons that teams wanted him so badly, was because the Astros have played so many playoff games and series, it really, in the entirety of Correa's career, it's not just flukishness or luck that Correa's been really, really good in the playoffs. It's kind of freakish how consistently good he's been in the playoffs versus the best competition in the league. He hardly ever has a bad series. Yep. Like, very, very rarely is he even in a series worse than his career averages. So, I mean, which is that's hard to come by, and people recognize that. So, primetime Correa is an actual thing. You're getting your pitchers back to health. This is no matter what the skid has been on the last 3 weeks or so, you can genuinely just hit the reset button now. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And if Yordan comes back, Seth, you're going from having a lineup that's basically Altuve, a bunch of minor leaguers, and maybe Christian Walker getting a big hit every now and then, to a lineup that is Altuve, in no specific order, Pena, Altuve, Correa, Yordan. And this is where I'll bring up Christian Walker and go glass half full. It's like, yeah, he has been better for the last – he had a really good July. You know, this is going to be fun.
And then the defense especially, I mean, that's a huge thing. The Astros are already, you know, one of the very best defensive teams in the league. And then you look at what happens yesterday and what the infield can look like on any given night. Because now you've got two extra guys that are really good defensively that you can shuffle in and out of whichever positions. And, you know, next year when Paredes comes back, it'll get super interesting.
That gets interesting on many levels, because is there a log jam? Do you put him at second base? Like, what do you do? We'll worry about that, Nick. Yeah, and for those who haven't heard, I think that news came down in the last 24 hours, too, Paredes out for the season. He's hoping to be ready for opening day next year. That's how bad the hamstring was. He had to have ripped that thing off the bone, right, Seth? And he's out 6 to 7 months?
I'm guessing that it was
just a really bad tear.
Hamstring tear is just the actual tendon being ripped off the bone or snapping in half. And that sounds what it probably was.
6 to 7 months.
Having suffered that same injury myself.
That's why I asked.
No, and as a player, you know, you can appreciate how Paredes maybe thought at first I'll be okay. But I tore two of the three hamstring tendons that attach to the pelvis off my bone. So one of them is still attached. So initially you feel like, hey, I'm all right, I can do this. And then you find out via the MRI. I don't know if maybe the Astros, they actually ran an MRI this time, maybe.
that would be crazy. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday here, day 8 of Texans training camp. We will get to some Texans talk, but the big news, Carlos Correa returning. We'll get you up to speed on all the other moves the Astros made. They made two other trades. There was one trade that got down to about the 5-yard line, it sounded like. What would things have looked like if they had pulled off all the deals that they were trying? Man, Jim Crane was shopping yesterday, man. We'll get to all that. We'll continue with some Carlos Correa talk. We'll circle over to the Texans as well as we roll on here. 8 o'clock, Texans All Access. Texans Training Camp Live will take over here. Live from Texans Training Camp, Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne.
Cody Bellinger's job is to look for information, get informed, know the facts for sure before he stands in front of cameras to talk about other players. You should get informed. You should be informed before you talk about other players. If you don't know the facts, then you got to shut the
I'm so excited to have him back, Seth. I'm just
remember, that was one of the things that everything kind of turned in terms of the way the fan base perceived Carlos Correa.
Yeah.
After that, because Correa, there was kind of a disconnect in some ways. He almost felt like there was almost like a touch of the A-Rod to him almost, where people just didn't feel like they could relate to Carlos Correa. And then all of a sudden, after the being better than everybody else scandal happened, and Correa was one of the guys who, you know, did the initial press conference and said, oh, I'm sorry, yeah, we were wrong. And then all of a sudden it just turned, and he flipped the switch, and he said, you know what? No. Yeah. Listen, you bunch of hypocritical BS. That part was awesome. And he was kind of a different guy. Whether he changed or not, I think the fan base just related to him differently after that.
Well, think about the year before. That was in that cut is in February of 2020. So that was early in spring training, right after the firing of AJ Hinch and Jeff Luhnow. And that was when the baseball world is piling on. Everybody's arriving at spring training. The Astros are the A topic. Everybody's got a microphone in front of them, and the Astros they're getting treated like a piñata. And from what we found out now, been treating like a piñata by teams that were doing kind of this, living in the same world the Astros were. Maybe not banging on a garbage can, but definitely using technology to cheat at that time. The most stark thing, I think one of the biggest reasons that Correa popped so big with the fans, Seth, was not just that audio we just heard, not just him taking that stance, really him kind of leading the charge in that stance, you know, that sort of non-politically correct apology crowd. Think about 2019. That was the greatest team in Astros history. They didn't win the World Series, but that was the greatest team in Astros history, purely in terms of the talent from top to bottom. Everybody had great years, except Carlos Correa had a broken rib for about half the season that he got from a masseuse, supposedly. You know, like that was probably the lowest. While the stock on the franchise was at its highest, the stock on Carlos Correa individually was probably at its lowest in that 2019 season because of that injury and because of his lack of availability. And so that's the thing. Sometimes, man, when it's you get that dead cat bounce when you're like when you're at your lowest low, like it's like a heel turn, like a bad guy becoming a good guy in WWE. Like the most over good guys are the guys who were the worst bad guys. So now you got Carlos, who everybody's like, he's out with a rib that he got from a masseuse. What the hell? And now he's out there just like swinging his axe like it's Braveheart, trying to chop everybody's head off that's saying anything bad about the Astros. That was a fun time. I hope he comes with that same energy this time around, just for no reason.
It was Corbin Burnson in Major League. When all of a sudden he decided to take a ground ball in the face every now and then for the good
Roger
of the team.
Roger Dorn, the great Roger Dorn, So Carlos Correa is back. They made a couple other moves, the Astros did. Two days ago, they traded with the Orioles for Ramon Urias, infielder. He at that time, Seth, the talk was like, okay, well, I guess this is your third baseman with Paredes out. You know, he's played third base. He's played a decent third base for the Orioles this year. He's played 66 games at third base. I guess this will be the solution. I guess now Urias and Dubon can sit next to each other in the dugout and just be super utility guys with each other.
It's been a flurry. Oh, wait, finish the moves.
So that was Urias for Twine Palmer, who I still contend that's not a real name, Twine Palmer. I don't think that's a real person.
I like it. It's an old-time baseball name. Back when every baseball player had a colorful name or nickname.
I said to Brandon Scott yesterday, I said, it sounds like a rodeo cowboy. You know, like all those rodeo cowboys have names. Yeah. They sound like they were named to be a cowboy. Jesus Sanchez, underrated pickup here. If Correa hadn't been traded for yesterday, we'd be playing this one up because this is it's an outfielder who's a capable left-handed bat. That they need right now might be able to, you know, Cam Smith is kind of hitting a little bit of a wall here, it looks like, you know, just in terms of the sheer amount of play, you know, like a rookie wall. So maybe Jesus Sanchez is able to give him a little bit of a break here and there. But that's a nice pickup. And the only thing, you're not sending anything out in any of these. Like, you sent out Ryan Gusto and a couple minor leaguers for Jesus Sanchez. They gave up nothing for Correa. They gave up an A-level 26-year-old reliever. And that was a total salary dump by the Twins.
Yeah. And with getting one more lefty into the lineup and then with Yordan hopefully coming back at some point, especially when you get to the playoffs, you think about some of these teams, that have just flat out been able to rest all of their left-handed pitchers in series, because the Astros have the fewest number of plate appearances by a lefty. They've also faced the fewest number of left-handed pitchers. So teams going into a series against the Astros are real. They're just able to pick and choose their best matchups, and it's really tough. It's one thing on a game-by-game basis, but you get into a seven-game series in the playoffs, and that's a tough challenge to overcome when teams just feel like they can kind of stack the deck against you before the games even begin. So that's without even getting incredible production out of him or anything, you create that much more uncertainty in the minds of the pitchers and the managers and everything else.
Well, Seth, let's be real. The way this team is right now, I mean, look, they're getting Peña back this weekend, but there's still going to be a lot of guys in this lineup who shouldn't be playing everyday Major League Baseball. When they traded for Sanchez yesterday, right after the Correa trade got announced, and they put Sanchez's numbers up on the TV screen, I'm like, okay, he's got 740 OPS and 10 home runs. Like, that's a guy who's not going to be a crater in the middle of the lineup
hitter. Yeah, well, yeah. If you think about the trade acquisitions, you get two infielders that are both really, really good defensively. Correa, obviously, and Urias. But the things that you have to do you're not going to have a 2019-level offense on this Astros team this year. Yeah. But how have you been able to make up for that? One of the things that they've done really, really well is just be excellent fielders.
Yes.
And they've been so good defensively that now you stack, you kind of double down on that and add to that. The offense doesn't need to be lights out. It just needs to be able to do something. Do something in the playoffs.
The last bit of news yesterday for the Astros was apparently they came very close to completing a trade for Dylan Cease. I mean, the Astros almost brought all the juice at the trade deadline yesterday for MLB. There were a lot of deals made and some decent deals made, and the teams that feel like they can contend largely they made some tweaks or some big deals. Seattle traded for Eugenio Suarez a couple of days ago, so this gets fun. Dylan Cease almost became an Astro. The reports were, Seth, that the Padres wanted Spencer Arrighetti and three prospects, and the Astros said no, and I'm glad they did, without knowing who the three prospects would be. But just the name Spencer Arrighetti, Dylan Cease has not been good this year. Of course, there's always the hope when you're trading with the Astros for a pitcher who's not pitching well that he comes to Houston and all of a sudden he turns into the best version of himself. But, I mean, Spencer Arrighetti's a guy you got under team control for five more years or something like that. And when he's been able to pitch, he pitched virtually the entire season last year. Probably like a lot of these guys this year, he got brought up sooner than the Astros would have liked last year because of all the injuries. But he's somebody who benefited from that. And by the end of the year, he was a guy that I felt like if the Astros had advanced past the wild card round and were playing in five or seven game series last year, he'd have started a game for you in the playoffs last year if you had made it further. So I'm glad they didn't move Arrighetti and obviously whoever the other three prospects were for Dylan Cease. It sounds like pitching was really expensive at this deadline. And that's what Dana Brown said yesterday. He's like, the price of poker just got way too high, even for relievers. Like, just the Astros are trying to find guys to fortify that middle part of the bullpen, which has started to kind of show some cracks here. But Dana Brown said just price too high for that.
It is, especially after, there was so much skepticism about Kikuchi at the trade deadline last year because he hadn't been pitching all that well, that Cease, I think everybody would have been excited about Cease, despite the fact that he's got a 4-plus ERA this season.
Yeah.
And the Astros' ability to just kind of take a guy, and the same thing happened with Verlander when he got traded. He wasn't having his best year. He had figured it out, and he had corralled it in that month or so before the trade deadline, but then becomes the best version of himself for the duration of his time with the Astros.
It's so funny you bring up Verlander. Like, when these trades start going down, as soon as the Correa trade happened, I'm like, go for it. Verlander probably wants out of San Francisco also. Go for it. Let's get everybody. Find out what Yuli's up to. Find out what Marwin's up to. Let's get everybody back together.
I didn't. Verlander is where I reached my limit. Just because
really?
We already had the sentimental signing with him. You got him in at a huge discount from the Mets. That was great.
Yeah.
But, this was the last time I was ready to – you got to draw a line somewhere.
Yeah. And yet I still think I would have been excited if it happened.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah. I'm saying that now. I said the same damn thing about Correa. And then as soon as the thing comes, I say, hey. Now, look, we have to remember, with Correa, it doesn't always go so simple once some kind of transaction happens in free agency or now perhaps via trade. Got to be sure there's no whatever that anomaly is in his lower leg.
Yeah.
He played with forever with the Astros.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this. When Correa left in free agency and he goes to the Twins, he goes for that 1 year and Jeremy Peña comes in, and Peña was solid enough all year. But then in the postseason, he had a better – Carlos is a great postseason player. He never had a postseason like Jeremy Peña had, Jeremy Peña's rookie year, where he was literally the best player in the ALCS and the World Series, or at least the most valuable player. And then the following offseason, you know, 22 going into 23, was when Correa got flunked on his physical by two teams. Like, Correa went into free agency, I think, with the sole purpose of being the next 10-year, $300 million guy. And it took him a year to get there, and then he did it twice and had the contracts ripped away from him, and then has to go back to Minnesota, which is not a contender. Like, I think the Giants and the Mets viewed themselves at the time. Neither of them wound up being contenders, but that's neither here nor there. So Carlos is back in Minnesota on 6 years, $200 million. Meanwhile, watching the Astros still make a deep run into the playoffs. And I said at the time that Carlos, watching Peña, watching the Astros still contend, sitting on a team in Minnesota that was a complete disaster at the end of last season, that he's probably a little upset that he didn't take the 5 years, 160 from the Astros, and just stay an Astro, considering how his whole – I mean, he's not poor. He got 6 years, $200 million, so he's not crying the blues. But just in terms of wanting to be on a winner, wanting to be an icon in the city, it would have been better for him at the time to just accept Jim Crane's offer in retrospect of 5 years, 160. I think yesterday validates that take, which is he waived his no-trade clause to come here at virtually the same money. Like, in the grand scheme of things, if Carlos didn't regret it, he'd still be a Minnesota Twin today.
I'll tell you what, if you think about some of those key guys from the golden era that went elsewhere and you wonder, okay, what emotionally, perhaps, what was the experience like for them? Verlander goes up to New York, and it was just a complete collapse and a disaster for the Mets that year after spending so much money. Springer, really, up until this year, has not had the same experience that he had with the Astros. Now, this year, it's different. The Blue Jays are very good, and Springer's been having a great year. But, yeah, any of those guys that left, there's the money side of it, but then there's the whole, man, not just the Astros were good, but that every veteran who comes in here talks about how, wow, the culture's just different here. It's different than a lot of major league clubs. So it's an extra feel-good moment, I think, when those guys come back. And the Astros get them in a discount.
Yeah.
The Twins are paying $33 million of Carlos Correa's deal. Jim Crane has done this now with multiple different GMs.
Yeah.
Hey, they'd like to spend a certain amount for these guys, but they just can't go. They're not going to break the bank completely.
No.
But, well, you know what? We might get them back anyway.
Yeah.
Well, but it's like buying a used car back that you once owned.
Right.
After the new owner goes bankrupt.
That's
right.
Like,
oh yeah, I picked it up at auction.
Turns out,
my payments are even lower on it now than before.
Well, and unlike the Verlander trade, where the Verlander trade, the Mets were paying a lot of that salary, but the Astros actually did have to give up two prospects that were highly thought of at the time. Drew Gilbert was one who I think they've already moved on from. The Mets put him in a deal this week, so he's already gone. I forget who the other one was, but it was two outfielders, and I know the Texters will tell me. Unlike that trade, the Astros gave up an A-level 26-year-old reliever. He wasn't even a draft pick of the Astros. They signed, like, he's a free agent they signed. He's languishing down in Asheville or Fayetteville or whatever. I mean, this is really taking advantage of a bankrupt person who bought your nice Maserati or whatever it is. I mean, because this is a – I'd love to know what they're saying in Minnesota today, because Correa wasn't the only deal they made. Like, they're trying to sell this team, and they stripped this thing down to the studs yesterday in Minnesota.
You know why it's such a great story emotionally is because it's something playing out that never actually works out in real life, which is, hey, let's take a break from the relationship. Maybe we should date other people.
Right.
And, okay, how often does that actually work out? Usually that's because one party really wants to date other people. or has been dating somebody already. So it doesn't usually work out. The Astros kind of like, yeah, you know what? You feel like, hey, we've been together since you were 17, and you want to go out and date other people? That's fine. But just go ahead and go see other people. And then Correa comes back.
Yeah,
or
man.
Verlander comes back. It's
Dude, it's just going to be – this is a game tonight. They play in Boston. It's on Apple TV, unfortunately, but I'll watch. Obviously, you know, I'll watch it on Apple TV if I have to. But this will be a big story on a national broadcast like Apple TV. Like there'll be shots of Altuve and Correa just chopping it up in pregame out there, and that's going to be really fun for Astro fans to see again.
Hey, everybody, let's do it right now. Set a reminder for yourself for September 28th or so, or August 28th, to cancel your Apple TV subscription.
There you go.
Because they got me last time. I can't remember when the last Astros game was, but I forgot to cancel the subscription afterwards.
Trial period.
And Apple TV ended up getting a few months out of me.
Yeah,
I'm not going to let them get me this time. I'm going to pay my one month, and then that's it.
That's the bizarro live read from Seth Payne. Seth Payne, a minute here for canceling Apple TV.
It's just too many, Sean.
Which is what you do when they're not paying you, yeah.
It's not like it's bankrupting me or anything, but I just feel so used, you know?
I thought you
duped me with this one. You duped me with this one thing, and then I was a sucker for it. I did exactly what you hoped I would do.
I totally hear you. All right, speaking of the Astros and the Red Sox, we'll talk about that in headlines. They get things going tonight. We'll get you up to speed on everything that went on with the trade deadline yesterday. There's news surrounding some former Astros, too. For trade deadline day yesterday that we got to get to. Training camp starts back up. We had football on TV last night. Football's back. So we'll get to all that in headlines coming up next. Stay there.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, we'll get to headlines here in a second. We just had a Texans legacy moment here out here at training camp. I'm walking over to grab a water. Good-looking young guy, has a couple big bags of ice. He's throwing them down, gives me a friendly hello. I'm like, how's it going out here, man? And, you know, we talk for about, 30 seconds, and then next thing you know, we're just learning, we're introducing each other. I come to find out, Chris Brown's son, your former teammate, former Texans place kicker Chris Brown, his son Colby is out here working an internship for the Texans.
I was there when he was born. Not right there in the delivery room or anything.
That would be awesome.
Chris and Amy didn't like me that much, apparently.
Picturing Chris, you got your arm around him right there in the
delivery
room.
Chris and Amy lived in Bel Air just down the street from us when we were first here in the first year of the team. And Chris and Amy were awesome. So it's really cool to see their kid, who looks exactly like both of them.
Good-looking kid, man.
He looks like an AI version of, like, what would you like your beautiful child to look like if it was a mixture of both of you? Like, oh, yeah, that's a good-looking kid.
Plays golf in college, so it means he's good at golf, too. You know, he's good-looking, good at golf. A lot of reasons to hate this kid.
Chris was a classic. A lot of kickers in the NFL are really good athletes, but you would never really know it. And if they tell you, they don't, you don't want to believe it. But, no, Chris was a really good high school quarterback up in Dallas when he was a kid. But it's good for him. Yeah, so he's doing the whole – had a little talk with him about, if he gets into football ops, you just got – You gotta join the 2020 club. You gotta be willing to work for $20,000 a year, 20 hours a day, and be really good at the menial. They'll notice you more for the menial stuff than they will for however you feel about the salary cap. They just want to see that you can work.
Nick Caserio's favorite four-letter word: work. Yes, that's his favorite four-letter word. Yeah. He loves to say the word work. All right, so that was fun. Let's get to headlines. The Astros are in Boston to face the Red Sox this weekend. They're on the starting out a long road trip here. They go to Boston. They go to Miami. They're back up north to New York before coming home on August 11th. I would circle that August 11th date because, Astro fans, that'll be your first chance to pay tribute to Carlos Correa in Chapter 2 as a Houston Astro. But in the meantime, the Red Sox and the Astros get it going tonight in Boston. Hunter Brown on the mound tonight, Seth. They had a day off yesterday. They're still kind of holding the Mariners and now the Rangers, too, at arm's length. The Rangers are back in this race now. But, man, this Carlos Correa trade is the big news. They get the Carlos Correa is once again a Houston Astro. The only thing going back to the Twins in this trade is an A-level minor leaguer that's 26 years old. This is the Twins trying to get out from under a big contract and paying the Astros $33 million, literally, to do it. Carlos Correa and Astro this season and for three more seasons after this.
And this is one where you can throw out whatever his regular season stats are this year. He's not having a great year. He's been very up and down. He's had one bad month, one good month, one bad month, one good month. But Carlos Correa in the playoffs is really why teams were so interested in him the first time, and I think why the Astros are interested in him again, not just for the legacy or what he provides in leadership. I think there's extra juice in the clubhouse right now. And he's still young enough that it doesn't feel like you're just going back to the old well. You got 3 years left on the contract after this. The Twins are paying a bunch of it. This feels right in a lot of ways. I can't wait to hear Altuve talk about it.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear Correa talk about it. I'm really anxious to hear everybody talk about this.
I can't wait to watch the HEB commercial.
Yeah,
the first time.
Dude. Yeah. They need an injection of Carlos in the HEB commercials right now. Mm-hmm. I think this is a good pickup for HEB. It's a good trade by HEB. Good job. So deadline day, Carlos Correa, the big news. The Astros also pick up Jesus Sanchez, an outfielder from the Marlins. The familiar name going out in that deal is Ryan Gusto. He's going along with a couple of minor leaguers. Neither are pitchers. One's an infielder, one's an outfielder.
Sanchez is a lefty. That's the big asset and bonus there, that especially with Yordan coming back, you might have three lefties in the lineup.
Crazy modern baseball.
There we go.
Yeah, I know. That'd be wild. That would be crazy. Spencer Arrighetti had a rehab start at Sugar Land last night. The numbers are not great. Without having watched it, I don't know. Do we treat these rehab starts like they're spring training?
You treat it like spring training.
For the sake of giving the numbers. 4 2/3 innings, 6 hits, 4 walks, gave up 6 runs, 5 strikeouts, gave up a couple home runs. The big thing to me is that he threw 79 pitches. Again, the numbers weren't great, but the numbers are whatever in these things. He threw 79 pitches in that game. So presumably when he comes back, and I would assume that Arrighetti, Javier Garcia, J.P. France, Seth, I got to believe that the report, independent of the starts they're making when you can look at the box score, I got to imagine all the reports on them on the days they're throwing in between, the velocities they're hitting, things like that, are all good. I think otherwise the Astros might have overspent on a pitcher yesterday, as opposed to saying nope, too pricey. I gotta think they feel like of the 4 or 5 guys, I'll throw Sean Dubin in there as well. Like he's at Sugar Land also. They got 5 pitchers at Sugar Land right now. I think they've got to feel good that at least like 3 of them are going to come back and be able to contribute to this team.
The thing with Arrighetti that I keep cautioning myself about is that he is still an unknown quantity. Really, you don't have a huge sample size on him. You have the progress that he made last year, but now in coming back from injury and still being a young pitcher, that you can't just put him up in pen that he's going to be really, really good. But you can feel better about him than a lot of the guys that have come out. And hey, Ryan Gusto looked pretty good for a – oh, never mind.
Did you see that Ryan Pressly was DFA'd by the Cubs yesterday, designated for assignment? That's baseball parlance for waived.
Yeah,
he was let go by the Cubs. So as long as we're welcoming everybody back, you know, Carlos Correa, Hector Neris is back with the team for a third time. Do they bring back Ryan Pressly just to flex that once again they salary dumped somebody on a team that cut the guy loose 3 months into the season and now we're just going to take him at a veteran's minimum or something like that?
It's a possibility. You already have to make 3 roster moves today for all of the guys that you're bringing onto the team.
Yeah.
But the bullpen has really been taxed. They've had to rely on because of the Brandon Walters and the Ryan Gustos.
I want Pressly back. I want him back just for the optics of bringing bringing back a guy that you salary dumped onto the Cubs before the season. I want that. Mm-hmm. They can cut him a week from now. I just want the transaction report of Ryan Presley signing with the Houston Astros.
And just because a couple people have had questions about this, obviously, how does it fit with Peña and Correa? Correa wants to play third base. He's going to be playing third base. There's no kind of Derek Jeter and A-Rod tension there where there's any kind of concern over who's going to play what. Correa's wanted to move to third base for a while, and they just hadn't been able to work it out right up in Minnesota for him to do that.
Yep. Training camp resumes today, day 8. I don't know if it'll be pads today or not. They went in pads, the Texans did, 3 straight days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Started getting a little chippy at the end of Wednesday's practice. It seemed like 3 days of pads in 100-degree heat were wearing on a few guys.
I suppose so. I'll tell you what, anybody listening, be a grumpy old man about this. Your kids in high school have a more physically demanding job right now if when they do their training camp than the NFL guy. I can't. These guys do one-a-days, you know? Yeah. Oh, you've been in pads for 3 straight days. Meanwhile, there's kids out there going 2-3-hour sessions a day in high school in Texas heat. So, yeah, whatever.
Well, and the ratio of player to staff out here that's able to run out and spray water in their mouths and things like that. You know, like the resource level of this compared to high school, you know, it's like, yeah, they got it pretty good.
Having said that, it was a shock to my system the first time I came to Houston.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a difference in that you're going up against really, really good 340-pounders compared to high school or whatever. But it's all for your individual challenge. Anybody listening right now, especially if you went through 2-a-days or 3-a-days back when football coaches were allowed to be really psychotic,
You
guys faced a bigger challenge relative to your physical skill than any of the NFL players are right
now. Fair.
Yeah. I felt guilty complaining about training. Even they had modified it enough by the time I was a veteran player that I kind of just like, I can't complain about this. What are we doing here?
At least not in the presence of guys who were there in like the 60s and 70s, for sure.
God, no. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Talking to guys from the Oilers that had practiced through an ACL for 7 weeks of training camp.
Exactly.
I had a little bit of an ACL tear there because we couldn't. There was actually no surgery for it, so I just kept going.
Hey, this time on Monday, we'll be in West Virginia, ready to put eyes on the team out at the Greenbrier. Are you excited for that?
I'm very excited about that. I'm excited too because of the setup up there. You get to see a lot more of the individual drills, the one-on-one pass rush and everything. The Texans are being cool with giving us more access this year in Houston, but in West Virginia, you just get to sit up in the bleachers and take it all in. If the Texans end up making this a yearly thing, I highly recommend taking a trip to the Greenbrier.
Not open to the public.
I double-checked.
It's not open to the public this year. Seth, I did the same thing last week, so don't worry about it. I had a few listeners asking me, you know, like DM on social media, like, hey, I live in Virginia. I'd love to drive up. Do you have to have tickets to get in? So I checked with the team, and they said not open to the public this time around, which is too bad because you're absolutely right. When it was open to the public back in 2017 and 2018, if you have the means to get up there and stay up there in West Virginia, it is the closest access you're going to get. There's far less competition for autographs up there than there is here. And that's a good thing. We like having competition for autographs here because it means the fans are back out here, you know?
It makes sense, too, though, that the Texans had that week up at Nick Caserio's old prep school in Ohio last year, and I think they really liked the battening the hatches and kind of just feeling like they were isolated in an old-school training camp environment with a lot of fanfare. So they're going for that, but probably with better facilities. No offense to Caserio's high school, but the Greenbrier has a really cool athletic facility up there.
Yeah, it's incredible. One final note in headlines here. Hall of Fame game was last night. We got football back. I don't care that it's Trey Lance starting on one side and former Texans legend Kyle Allen starting for the Lions last night. The Chargers win 34-7. So my hot take, the Lions are going to suck this year. They're going to be terrible. They just got blown out.
Well, Trey Lance, the stats coming out of that game are so crazy. The number of passes that Trey Lance threw in that game, it comprises like 10% of all the reps he's ever taken in high school, college,
dude,
the NFL, and including preseason games. He just hasn't played that much football.
It's incredible.
So, yes, it's the preseason. You're going against vanilla backup defenses, and yet there's still potential unknown upside there. And I would love it if somehow the Cowboys really gave him. They tried to make a little experiment with Trey Lance and let it go. Man, who knows? Maybe they'll let a good one out of there.
Yeah, maybe. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Live Texans training camp day 8 gets started. 9 o'clock practice gets started. 8 o'clock Texans training camp live in the loop. Reggie and John will be out here today as well. So we're looking forward. This will be our last day out here because come next week they'll be in West Virginia. Let's reset the Carlos Correa deal. Seth brought up an interesting point in headlines that I think we need to dig into a little bit, which is, okay, we know how it looks this season. What does it look like next season? What does it look like in the offseason for the Astros when they try to figure out this infield puzzle that they've created for themselves with the Carlos Correa deal? And is there an injury with the Texans that we are not making a big enough deal out of right now? We'll discuss that as well. We'll do that in the 7 o'clock hour.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday here live at Texans training camp, day 8 of Texans training camp. We are live, and practice will get kicked off at 9 o'clock today. Texans training camp live coming on after us in the loop. Reggie Atatula and John Lopez, 10 to 2. They'll be out here at Texans practice today as well. The big news today, Carlos Correa is a Houston Astro once again. I'll credit Tyler Milner. I don't know if he put together this montage of Carlos Correa, but it was on his show email that he sent to everybody. I listened to it before the show. And if you're getting excited about this, and Seth and I have, I think, been getting appropriately excited about this throughout the first hour of the show, if you're just getting in your car maybe, you want a little juice from the Carlos Correa deal, let's relive some of the magic that was Carlos Correa in stint number one as a Houston Astro.
With the first selection of the 2012 first-year player draft, the Houston Astros select Carlos Correa, a shortstop from Puerto Rico Baseball Academy, Puerto Rico.
If you don't know the facts, then you got to shut the
There's a ball into right field, hit well, that'll be over the head of Haniger, it'll bounce into the crowd, and that'll be a game winner! Astros win it, 5-4, the walk-off double by Correa!
Carlos is a clutch man, he's big game Carlos to me.
Here's Gleyber Torres, pass Bregman, deep in the hole, Correa long throw, he got him! Carlos Correa from shallow left field!
In the air, center field, Correa's watching, this is back, and it's gone! It's a walk-off home run! Carlos Correa! Astros win!
La pelota en dirección hacia territorio del jardín central, Carlos Correa, Duque! Díganle que no es a pelota!
When I talk to my wife, she knows, no getting your nails done, not getting your hair done right now. She knows.
In the air, deep to left field, fair or foul. That ball's a home run. 2-0 Astros, Correa.
So what are they going to say now?
The Astros fans, I will say thank you for all your support, not only on the field, but also off the field. I feel your love. You know, coming from Puerto Rico, 17 years old, you know, I was kind of scared at that point in the city, the fans.
I can watch you celebrate, and right now I'm looking forward to the champagne. Maybe get drunk tonight.
Okay, there you go. So I forgot how quotable he was.
What was the one about his wife not getting her hair done?
I forget.
Was it playoffs or something?
I know that it was something that got tossed around on the station quite a bit. Let's just put it that way. I'm trying to remember what the text in. If you guys remember what the what the circumstances were surrounding. I was thinking the same thing, Seth. I'm like, oh, this is so familiar. I can't remember what exactly it was.
This is the payoff that you get, I think, where if you get frustrated that the Astros won't go above and beyond and pay outside of their comfort zone when a guy leaves the team. They've done it multiple times now, most notably with Verlander and now Correa, where a guy leaves and then they end up, the money they didn't want to pay gets paid by the team that signed the guy initially in free agency.
Yeah.
The Astros got Verlander back and the Mets were still paying a huge chunk of his salary. Now the Astros get Correa back and where Pena has done what you want him to do over his first few years and he's developed as a shortstop. You get Pena back, he's back in the fold, and the Twins are going to pay $33 million of his salary.
And
it's like it pays off. There's an old saying that after a financial bubble bursts, that money finds its way back into the hands of its rightful owners.
Yeah.
And I feel like with the Astros, there's a little bit of that. Like, all right, well, you guys want to pay exorbitant prices? So eventually, that player will end up back in the hands of its rightful owner.
He's been gone for 3.5 years, Carlos has. And in those 3.5 years, you've developed his replacement to the level where it was in the top three in wins above replacement before he got hurt. And you won a World Series. In 2022, you've won a World Series without Carlos Correa.
The crazy thing about that, too, was when you look at wins above replacement, Carlos was real big on that his last couple years leading up to free agency. But the thing that was different about Correa was a lot of his WAR stats were bolstered by how good his defense was.
Yeah.
And likewise with Peña, the defense has come along really, really well. And there's not even any uncomfortable moment about whether Correa plays shortstop or third because he wants to play third.
That's right.
And it's a seamless transition in a lot of ways.
So you brought this up during headlines, and I think it's something worth talking about because we haven't talked about it yet today. Obviously, we're celebrating Carlos Correa being back. And look, this is a team right now that for the rest of this season isn't worried about, oh, we got too many guys, and how's the puzzle going to fit together? They needed reinforcements, and credit Dana Brown and Jim Crane. They went and got him yesterday. Carlos Correa is an Astro again. Jesus Sanchez is an Astro. That's a nice lefty bat that you need in the outfield. Ramon Urias from Baltimore, I think, serves a purpose. You know, like, look, Zach Short is on your team right now. You know, if nothing else, he can replace that guy and be a plug-in infielder somewhere for you. They did a really good job with the everyday lineup, which I think needed more attention than the pitching staff did, just based on the number of pitchers they're going to have coming back here pretty soon. And plus, the pitching staff's been good this year. Even with all the injuries, statistically, it's been a good pitching staff. But it is a conversation, Seth, once this season's over, because Isak Paredes is going to return at some point. Now, it's going to be a while. 6 to 7 months is the forecast. But the option, so you're going to have Carlos Correa at third base, Jeremy Peña at shortstop. Paredes had been your all-star third baseman before he got hurt. We know second base has been a revolving door. So I suppose that's an option, but every Chandler Rome article that I've read in the last 2 weeks, or really since Correa coming here became a thing, Chandler mentions that people around baseball and people within the Astros don't necessarily feel like Paredes is an ideal fit at second base for this team. So
yeah,
you might be creating a defensive issue here by moving Paredes over there.
Some of that stems from just when he's played it in the past where it hasn't been his sole focus, and I wondered if that's less of a concern than
that's a good point.
Maybe it's just a matter of, okay, if he gets the reps, it should be easier. And theoretically, it's easier than playing third base, and if he just gets the reps, it should be fine.
These are the options. You tell me what you think is the most likely option next year. Let's assume Paredes is healthy again in spring training, right? So Correa, Peña, Paredes are all on this team and healthy. Well, possibly not under one of these scenarios, but you tell me which of these is most likely to kind of, you know, alleviate the logjam. Paredes moving to second base, so you got Correa third, Peña shortstop, Paredes at second, move Paredes to second, moving Correa to second and leaving Paredes at his more comfortable position. I think Carlos would be good at any position in the infield. That's number two. Trade Isak Paredes, still got 2 years of team control. He's an all-star. If he's healthy, he might bring some value. Or the nuclear option, which Chandler Rome brought up in his article about this trade yesterday, which is not out of the realm of possibility now that we saw them trade Kyle Tucker this past offseason, trade Jeremy Peña. With 2 years of team control still left.
Oh, goodness gracious. No, I don't think. If there's one thing we know about the Astros, two things we know about the Astros, you can expect fireworks at the trade deadline more often than not, and they did that. This extends back to the Verlander trade. Ever since the Verlander trade, it's kind of been their recipe is, that, hey, go big or go home at the trade deadline.
Yep.
But then also with guys like Peña, that there's the Kyle Tucker trade is an exception, you know, and that was done with 1 year remaining.
But it's the most recent also. It's
the most recent, but also Kyle Tucker wasn't made of the same stuff that Jeremy Peña is in terms of just the way he operates. Yeah. And I think Peña very much operates like your ideal Astros player.
Yep.
He's the hustle, the grit, all of those things. Like he fits the mold. He would fit right in on that 2017 team, a 2019 team. And obviously Kyle Tucker was on those teams, but he was always going back to when he was a rookie. And AJ Hinch said that he needed to understand there needed to be a different level of urgency. He was never that same guy. He wasn't cut from the same cloth as a lot of those other guys, whereas Peña is.
I think we should point out, too, the trade Peña option. Peña still has 2 years of team control left, not just one like Tucker did. So that should be pointed out. I think you create – first of all, I don't think they're doing that. I think they're going to ride it out with – I think they're going to ride it out with Peña for these next 2 years. I don't think they're – now, he would bring back a haul in return because of the position he plays. I think you create big defensive problems by trading Jeremy Peña because now you're moving an aging Correa to shortstop, a position, by the way, that he said he's trying to move off of. And I think you're creating your second base is still an issue. You know, I think you're creating more issues with that.
Yeah, I think it's easily you move Paredes to second because yes, Paredes has been good at third, but he's nowhere near the defensive player that Carlos Correa is. Correa is still very, very elite defensively, and second base is just the downside isn't nearly as great. If Paredes isn't as good a second baseman in the field as he is at third, The tit for tat just isn't.
He's been pretty good this year at third. He's been pretty solid this year.
I know he's been pretty solid, but Correa is awesome.
So,
don't know why you would. I think it's. You don't have to overthink this. Paredes goes to second.
Yeah.
And you don't. As far as trading Paredes away, he's tailor made for this ballpark. I don't think that you got to remember that, and you still have the control left on his contract. I don't think there's any level of urgency unless an awesome deal materializes at some point. I don't think you're urgent to do that.
Yeah, you and I are in agreement on this. I'm kind of spitballing all the options that are available there. Yeah. I think that's the most obvious one is that one, and that probably ends up being what they're doing. You know, some people would say, well, what about first base? You got Christian Walker for 2 more years. First base is not enough. And Christian Walker, if we're talking about defense, is at his best. He's an elite defender as well over there. So, hey, look, man, these are good problems to have. Carlos Correa is back on the Astros, and somebody else is paying a big chunk of the freight. The Astros are sitting in a at a steak dinner with the Twins and just slid the tab over to them last night is what they hear. $33 million. Why don't you pay that, Twins? How do you like that?
I feel bad for these teams. I feel bad for these teams. That just they give it the old college try, and then they find out that they're not the team they thought they could be.
Yeah.
And they fail, and then they have to, you know, do a semi teardown all over again. Sorry about it. I know this has been hard for you, Sean. given the acrimony that's existed between you and the Twins fan base for about a year or so now.
I think you know exactly what I did last night. Went back to my last video I did from Target Field, pulled up the replies and started replying to all the replies. I'm like, how you doing? How's baseball?
My favorite replies that you get in response to that are the people that say, oh, can't believe this guy went back and found an old tweet and this is what he's obsessed with. Yeah, that's what your job is. And listen, Einstein, bookmarking a tweet isn't all that difficult. They don't understand the way social media functions, perhaps.
Those are the worst ones. The worst ones are the ones that think I've kept their tweet bookmarked for a year and that I've been waiting to respond to TwinFan6969 for 428 days now. Like, no.
You've just been sitting and obsessing over it. Yeah.
You're right. No. Carlos Correa got traded here. I wouldn't have tweeted at you had that trade not happened. Carlos Correa gets traded. I go search for my tweet from a year ago, and then I pull that up, and then I just look at all the replies. That's what I do. Yeah. You're not renting space in my head. No. You're having an Airbnb for one night in my head.
This might get too social media nerdy, but this happened. Like, usually, the only time I ever search my name on social media is if I'm trying to figure out if I should block somebody or not. Because I'm like, all right, well, let's see if, like, I don't know if this guy's just being sarcastic or a jerk.
They've been talking crap. Have they been talking crap about you, that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. So one guy, like, specifically, I didn't even search my name. I went back. The guy said something. I'm like, what's this guy's deal? So I just went to his timeline.
Yeah.
And he had said some pretty nasty stuff about the old Sethers there. So
who could do that?
Yeah, so I replied to something he had said, and he was like, "Yep, I knew it. I put your name in there in quotes because I knew you would. I knew you'd Google your name." I'm like, "All right, you caught me." I guess, yeah, I wanted to specifically he was
fishing for you,
searching to see what kind of a jerk you were. Yeah, I have no shame about that.
Why did he think
it wasn't like
me
trying to inflate my ego or something?
Why did he think you were such a jerk? You're not a jerk. Why did he think you were such a jerk? Do you know?
This is a guy who's kind of he's a weirdo. He's okay. Like an extreme weirdo. I realize. Yeah, he's got a lot of weird things that he said. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
There's other people that hate me for legitimate reasons, but this guy's just a weirdo. He'd be in the vast minority of like people who don't like Seth Payne. He was just specifically doing it because this guy doesn't like, you know, newborn babies and stuff. He's just a hater. Yeah.
Puppy dogs, rainbows, ice cream, Seth Payne. Yeah. He doesn't like any of those things.
Because I don't like to block somebody unless unless they've got a proven track record.
Yeah, I'm a big muter. I do a lot of muting. I figure, you know, I like to keep my followers.
Muting is that Twitter still, it's like they put it up saying like you can't see this reply because you've muted this person. I'm like, oh well, now I gotta see what they said.
Yeah, that's
true.
They
give you a notification that somebody you're trying to ignore is saying something about you. Yeah.
We'll certainly circle back to Carlos Correa here as we roll on. Nice long segment here in the 7 o'clock hour, live from Texans training camp, day 8. All right, so the NFL Top 100 is getting unveiled right now. Joe Mixon, they're doing – this is excruciating for me, Seth. You know I'm an NFL Top 100 players truther, and, you know, they used to release them in much more of a rapid fashion. They're doing two a day every weekday until September 1st. This is excruciating for me. I'm like, I want to know them all. We didn't see any Texans through the first 40-ish players. Joe Mixon pops up at number 58 in the NFL's top 100. And here's a few of the clips. I've got a question for you about Joe Mixon when we're done playing this. But there's a few of the clips from, you know, they do like a 3-minute vignette on each player. Joe Mixon is the first player to pop up for the Texans in the NFL top 100. So I think this is going to be, we're going to see a lot of Texans here in this thing over the next few weeks. And again, this is something the players vote on. They had a big article in The Athletic yesterday. Yeah. I guess there's like 1,000 players that vote on this thing.
There's 1,000 players that vote on it, but this is how they do it. And this is where it gets kind of weird and random, is that the players just vote for who their top 20 players are in the league. So which I don't think is the best methodology, but it's the best way to get guys to actually participate.
Yeah.
So at the very least, there's a few guys out there that put Joe Mixon in their top 20. I'd like to think that it was divisional opponents from either the AFC North or the AFC South that still have a lot of respect for Joe Mixon.
Well, here's a couple of players who've gone against Joe Mixon. I'm not sure exactly why they have Dietrich Wise in Joe Mixon's vignette, because he's on the Commanders and they didn't play the Commanders last year, the Texans didn't. But here's what Dietrich Wise had to say about Joe Mixon, number 58 player in the top 100.
After 7 years in Cincy, Joe Mixon arrived in Houston determined to show he's still a force.
One of the most underrated running backs in the game. He's one of the bigger backs, but you can tell he's still elusive.
Hand to Mixon, cut back. Joe Mixon, goodbye. Touchdown, Texans.
He's been that guy for a long time. Changed teams, but you can tell he still had that edge. He was still running angry. He runs hard. He runs fast.
Come on, man. What are they talking about, man?
What are they talking about? That was Joe at the end there, just after plowing over somebody.
He'd been with the Patriots forever, so it would run up against
Wise?
Joe Mixon more frequently than a Commanders player might.
Gotcha. Okay, so he might have seen him last year. Mixon is number 58. Now, here is Mixon talking about his favorite play of the year, and just to set the visual, this was week 8 against the Colts, a touchdown that Joe Mixon had where it's about a 20 or 30 yard touchdown where the hole opens up he ends up making a cut that has two Colts slamming into each other like Keystone Cops, and then he just tosses a defensive back down when he gets to the end zone.
An exciting play for me was when we played the Colts, cut up, cut back, making two people run into each other, and then throwing somebody off of me and finishing.
What a run by Mixon!
So Mixon gets downhill, cuts it all the way back after he gets through to the second level, and then it's just power running through Jalen Jones, who's trying to strip that ball out. Just too strong.
Dude, I think Jalen Jones was also the guy that Nico Collins trucked not once but twice on the same play.
In the playoffs.
In the Week 18 game the year before,
I thought that Nico might have was in danger of the rare offensive unnecessary late roughness, hit. The ball carrier getting the unnecessary roughness for a late hit. Yeah, because he hit him after he'd already run out of bounds.
I remember
that first Colts game, too. It looked like, remember how excited we got? Because it looked like, wow, the run game might really be something. They had some really,
this is how it should look.
That was how it should look. They had some really nice plays where it was blocked up well, but then I remember going back and watching that again and seeing some things that really needed to be cleaned up that they went on their bad plays, and those spoiler alert, those things never got cleaned up. They've got noticed on film and exploited to an extreme degree.
Yes. They're a little cleaner in training camp so far, but there's still a lot of work to do on the offensive line. Last one here from Joe Mixon's vignette. I like this one because this was Zaire Franklin, who played for the Colts. You know, he was playing in those Colts games last year where Joe Mixon just ran wild in those games, and he had some really nice things to say about Joe Mixon.
I feel like he was the difference for Houston this year. Great feet in the hole. He can make you miss on a dime. Great vision, patience. He can go everywhere. Big physical runner. He's like 6'3". He run with attitude. He's probably the best running back I played this year.
In their playoff win over the Chargers, Mixon surpassed 100 yards for the 8th time of the season. And on the Texans' final scoring drive, he carried 11 times.
Nick Caserio, general manager right now for the Houston Texans, has to be thinking to himself, this is why we got number 28.
That's what we're about. That's what we're about.
You're not just
right
there.
Great job.
I'm just told.
Yes, sir.
That was D'Amico getting Joe Mixon all fired up. Here's my question, Seth, and especially this is where it dawned on me was hearing. That's why I wanted that last part from the narrator in there, and I had forgotten about that. I remember Joe Mixon being excellent in that win over the Chargers. I had forgotten that they just completely leaned on the run game to close that game out and gave the ball to Mixon 11 times on the final drive. Are we not making enough about Joe Mixon's absence in training camp so far?
No, we are. I think we're appropriately concerned about it, and I think there's the one side of it is whenever we get concerned about any kind of injury, we get so much blowback from people that tell us that, you know, yeah, you guys are just worrying about something. You're just fake news. You're just trying to make something out of nothing. Like, no, it's a big deal. But I do think, if anything, I feel like where some of us, either in the media or in the fan base, are maybe I don't understand this sentiment that the Texans should have done more to bolster the running back position in the offseason, because you don't have to in the modern NFL if you have a good offensive line and if you have other things operating correctly. You can go out and get running backs if you need to at the trade deadline, or excuse me, at the cuts. You could do a trade during training camp, whatever it might be. But we're just kind of burned by last year, the only time you could get any kind of rushing production was when Joe Mixon had superhuman efforts. Mm-hmm. He was dodging guys in the backfield at a top three rate in the league. The amount of times that he just couldn't even get to the line of scrimmage without breaking a tackle was kind of crazy. So you're going out on a little bit of a flyer, but if the offensive line can just function like an average offensive line in the NFL, backup running back isn't as great a concern. Now, if this were something that Joe Mixon ended up missing an entire season with, yes, I'd be worried about it. But you can make do for a few games if he has to have a slow start to the season.
Yeah, I'm not worried about I guess there's two things you'd worry about. The lack of reps you're getting when you're not out here on the practice field. And number two, the severity of the injury. Does it drag into the season? I'm more worried about the second one than I am Joe Mixon didn't practice last year, and he ran for 160 yards in week one. I'm not worried about he's not out here in the heat running around. I'm worried that you get to the Rams game, and now all of a sudden, like, you're going in with Nick Chubb at a fraction of what Nick Chubb used to be. Jawar Jordan never started a game before. You never played in an NFL game before. I'm more worried about that than I am whatever the lack of camp is for Joe Mixon.
The other part of it, too, is, you know, we've already been through this last year where people were upset that the Texans weren't more aggressive in going out and finding a safety. And you look around, and you're like, I'm pretty sure they drafted a safety. And now, all of a sudden, yeah. Kalen Bullock, this training camp 1 year later, is on so many lists of people of like, wow, this is a guy to watch. This is the guy. This is the X factor that nobody's talking about. Kalen Bullock is becoming the guy that he's being designated that nobody's talking about this guy so much that everybody's talking about him. Because everybody's saying, like, everybody wants to be the clever one outside of Houston. They're like, hey, by the way, Kalen Bullock, yeah. He's looked incredible in camp so far.
And he's had a great camp so far.
So likewise, they drafted Woody Marks. And, yes, it's just a fourth rounder, but it's a very specific type of running back that they took in the fourth round who has an extreme experience as a receiver. And I think that they're probably hoping that Woody Marks might develop not into perhaps an all-purpose back early in his career, but that's something that he can work towards, but that also he can be an option. Nick Chubb, I feel like you just have to tamp down your expectations for getting back peak Nick Chubb, but for can he be viable and can he be somebody that behind a good offensive line can just do what he's supposed to do, be an asset in pass protection and all of those other things. I think that's very still much in play. It's just until I see some pop or burst out of him, I'm not going to get super excited about
it. Yeah, and we haven't seen any of that. I mean, you know, he's hit it up there in the hole on a few of the 11-on-11 plays. It's not like they're spreading the reps equally right now. Like, the last practice was literally equal between the first, second, and third string, the Wednesday practice. First string got 4 snaps, second string got 4 snaps, third string got 4 snaps for 3 straight team periods. And then the last team period, they did 2-minute drill, and it was a different number of snaps, but each team got 1 drive. Yeah. So there's been few and far between chances to really assess Nick Chubb, but I can say he hasn't done anything yet that's really popped. I guess the thing that makes me a little nervous is Jawar Jordan has done some things that he has had runs where it's not one of these things where he gets mugged by 3 or 4 guys and they let him go and then he keeps running and the crowd cheers because he's still running. Like, no, Jawar Jordan's running to daylight right now out here at camp.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The only thing about that is, I'm not saying that Jawar Jordan can't end up being really good. It's that we saw the same thing out of Jawar Jordan last year. In training camp, when it's non-contact, he's smaller than Stephon Diggs. You know, he's a 180-pound running back he's got to prove that he can do it versus actual NFL defenses in full contact football. But it is intriguing. I'm totally intrigued by the upside. I'm not going to get too excited about anything I see in training camp.
Well, this is one of those things where, you know, you hope that the injuries put you in a situation where you stumbled onto something, because he would not be getting the reps he's getting if Joe Mixon and even if Damian Pierce were healthy. Like, if I had to guess, if Joe Mixon were healthy and Damian Pierce were healthy, that's your 1, 2, and 3. Even Dare's getting some. When it's a third down situation, Dare's the one who's in with the ones right now. So Jawar Jordan is getting a real opportunity here. But you're absolutely right. You said that the other day about him being smaller than Diggs, and then he came out of the bubble and walked 10 feet from us. I'm like, he is small.
Yeah,
wow,
yeah.
Is he? I mean, you're standing next to him, like, he is small.
And again, I'm not saying that means he can't be a good NFL player, but it's that you got with guys like that, you really got to take it with a grain of salt in getting excited about what you see in training camp.
Yeah.
Because the size and physicality isn't nearly as much of a factor in training camp as it is in actual regular season football
games. You're totally right. Hey, do you think CJ makes the top 100 in this? He was 20 last year, and they're down to The highest quarterback they've got right now is Justin Herbert at 56. I've got to think that CJ still has not been unveiled yet. I got to think that the other players around the NFL, I'm hoping, have a higher level of respect for CJ Stroud than they do for Justin Herbert.
I think it's very possible he doesn't make it, but because you have to remember that the way if the players, when they voted on it, actually sat down and listed out their top 100 players, then he would 100% make the list.
Yeah.
But what they do is they have the players list their top 20 players.
Yeah.
And those are the only votes they can give. So I'm thinking about when a player is sitting down and he's doing his top 20, he's probably only going to want to put a few quarterbacks in there.
Yeah.
So that's where but yes, there will be at least there will be enough guys that voted him into the top 20. That either because they played against him or they've just been impressed with him in general, that he'll be somewhere. He's got to be higher than.
Tua made the top 100. Like, he's better than.
Oh, that's
Tua.
The one you should have said. You should have led with Tua.
Well, I only say Herbert because he's the most recent quarterback to be unveiled. Like, he's the highest ranked quarterback that we know of right now. Yeah, but Tua's 92. Like CJ.
Yeah,
had,
I don't know.
That
had to have been offensive players who were voting for Tua. I don't know. I don't know what defensive players would have thought that Tua was anything more than a scheme dude at this point.
Yeah, no, totally. They said in this article, they had a super long-form article about the history of the NFL Top 100 and how they've tweaked how they've done it through the years. And it was in The Athletic yesterday. If you're a junkie for it like I am, it's a really informative article. They brought up some of the guys who've made it that you go back and look like, how the hell did this guy make the top? I have a few of the names. But the one thing they said was they hand the ballots out in person now as opposed to doing it online. Like NFL film speed, they visit every stadium down the stretch and they hand out the ballots. So they've gotten a lot more participation now. They've got like 1,000 players that do it now. But they start doing it around Thanksgiving. And I'm thinking to myself, when it comes to Herbert, I'm like, well, that was when Herbert, like, at Thanksgiving, everybody thought there was this renaissance for Herbert. Like, he hasn't thrown any interceptions. And CJ was going through it around Thanksgiving, you know? Like, so that's the part that I say scares me. Like, if CJ doesn't make it, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. But I'm just thinking of, like, some of it may be, like, when these guys voted. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, it's a fun little thing. He doesn't make it, he doesn't make it. But
do kids these days even know how to write with a pen and paper? I do, because I do. I sure as hell don't. I was trying to take notes on the airplane yesterday, and I went back to look over. I didn't know. I don't know what I wrote, Sean. Somebody was slipping a Mickey or something. That doesn't look like English.
The NFL posts the actual ballots of some of the players on social media, like the handwritten ballots. And you're so right. Like, some of them, like, oh my God, I can barely read this. How do they tabulate this?
I don't think I've completely lost the ability to write legibly.
I'm used to have really nice penmanship. It's gone downhill for sure. For sure. Okay, a few of these names. Remember the time Blake Bortles was thought to be the 56th best player in the NFL?
Yeah.
Back in 2016, Case Keenum made it the year after the Minneapolis Miracle. That offseason,
nice.
Case was 51st. Mac Jones was once thought to be the 85th best player in the NFL after his rookie year. So there's some Tim Tebow made it one year. Jacoby Jones made it the year after he had that huge postseason where he had the big touchdown against the Broncos and then the huge Super Bowl.
You know, Case Keenum, you might see a little bit of Case this year. Case Keenum with Ben Johnson as his coach. And Caleb Williams gets injured or something, you might see some of that old magic.
Did you see the stories out of Chicago that Ben Johnson is, I guess, just rips their ass every day? He is not getting along with Luther Burden right now.
Wide receiver. He kicked the Luther Burden out of a drill. I feel like that they might have made more of that than.
I sure am.
It had to be. Yeah, he got kicked out of a drill because he didn't know what he was doing, which is that happens. Yeah, if you're screwing up the drill, it's the worst thing you could do. This is what I tell young guys: don't screw up a coach's drill. First and foremost, I give the most boring advice, which is the most crucial advice, and only guys that will make it in the NFL actually listen to it. Here's the magic. The magic thing you need to know. Know the playbook.
Yep.
And but what about grinding and hashtagging and so? No, just no. Sit in your room with the playbook and know the freaking playbook. That puts you 78% ahead of all other rookies.
You know who hasn't gotten kicked out of practice? Jaden Higgins nor Jalen Knoll. Neither of them have been kicked out of practice.
Yeah.
So Ryan Poles drafting a bunch of dummies up there. Nick Caserio drafting Rhodes Scholars here.
It is. Yeah. Luther Burden, the anonymous scouts, were kind of questioning just how dialed in he was. So I think people might have been making too much of like the actual the way Ben Johnson handled it and kicking out of his drill. But I think you can very much read into like, oh wow, this guy's not as dialed in after missing a big chunk of OTAs and whatnot.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, he was injured during OTAs. Payne and Pendergast with you live from Texans training camp. We'll circle back to the Astros in the final segment of the show. I've got a Jim Crane question for the audience, but I want to pose a question to you, Seth. I sent this to you yesterday, and I posed this to John Harris and Mark Vandermeer 2 days ago. Brandon Scott yesterday, and I posted a poll on social media, and it is as divided a poll as I've done, like kind of down the middle. And I don't know if you've seen the results, so I kind of just gave away a little bit of that. But I'm more curious your opinion than what you think the people think. But the two scenarios I propose for the first 5 weeks of the season, which every time I look at the schedule, I'm like, that's going to be a fun first month of the season. You got a couple division games. You got some playoff teams in there. At the Rams, this is the first 5 weeks. At the Rams, home for the Bucks. At the Jags, home for the Titans. At the Ravens. Your choices are solely these two scenarios. Start 4-1, but the one loss is a convincing loss to the Ravens, which we've experienced many times. Mm-hmm. So you start 4-0, but then you get housed by the Ravens, and this all goes into the bye week. Or start 3-2, but that one of those wins is a convincing win, you know, a win where you're in control in the fourth quarter in Baltimore against the Ravens going into the bye. So you go in the bye week with having vanquished your most hated, foe that has embarrassed you the most, but your record's not quite as good.
This was more divided than I thought, because my thought initially, very easily, without even thinking about it, was I want that win over the Ravens in Baltimore, specifically because you said that if they had gone 4-1 and lost to the Ravens, you said in the usual way, which I took to mean, oh, they got just mollywopped by the Ravens. That part of it is where it felt like the first four games that they won might have just been an illusion, and that, not an illusion, just same as it was last year, where they can beat some teams, but when it comes to really crunch time and beating teams like the Vikings or the Chiefs or the Ravens, that they're just not there yet. So I would, if they beat the Ravens as opposed to getting mollywopped by the Ravens, that means good things not just for the offense but for the defense. Because one thing the Texans defense struggled with last year was teams that can line up with multiple tight ends and fullbacks and play super physical football. They weren't as good a defense versus teams like that. And we saw it on Christmas Day to an extreme degree. So a lot of people were saying, well, no, you go 4-1, take the wins. What are you talking about? Don't be an idiot. There's more to it than that. There's like just actually the actual matchup. Those first four games, I don't worry about the matchups the same way I worry about the Ravens matchup. So for them to get over the hump versus a team like that, whether the logo on their helmet is the Ravens or not, I think it means more. And I think it bodes well for getting those extra wins that you need in the last three quarters of the season. So I would take that one.
I can tell you
the most annoying reply that I saw was from Nomad Scott, who said people that put the Ravens win are more worried about attention and ego. Quote, make a statement, put the league on notice. No, listen, Nomad Scott, don't tell me what I was thinking in doing that. Mine was more of an actual systemic, actual football thing. I don't give a damn what the rest of the league thinks. I want the team to be structured in such a way that they can win playoff games versus really good football teams.
I think two things real quick. I think one, you know, I'll always defer to the Vegas community on this, and I can tell you that come week 7, coming out of the bye week, a Texans team that is 3-2 and beat the Ravens convincingly will be ranked higher and will be thought more highly of in Vegas than a 4-1 team that got whomped by the Ravens. To me, that's a sign that you just got a better football team, and you still got 12 games to make up that one game that's the difference between 4-1 and 3-2. I would also say too, you'd have the tiebreaker over the Ravens, which you've never had before. In case you are tied at the end of the year, you got the head-to-head win. The other thing I think of too, Seth, just in terms of guys like me and you that do this for a living, not the Ravens game, but these two scenarios of what the first 4 weeks would be like on the radio. A 4-0 start would be incredible on the radio, right? Whereas a 2-2 start means you are guaranteed to lose at least one of these games, the home opener on Monday Night Football or one of those two division games. Yeah. You go 2-2 to start the season, the math doesn't allow you to win those three games. You're going to lose one of those three games.
Or even in that case, too, the two losses could have been versus a couple of the more viable teams in the Rams and the Bucks.
And you're starting 0-2.
Yeah, you're starting 0-2. Which you can come back from. I guess the big thing about the Rams get off to slow starts every year. They don't play their starters hardly at all in the preseason. So
Stafford's banged up right now, too.
Yeah, and Stafford's banged up. But even if Stafford is 100% healthy, they start off kind of rusty. So yeah. I'm intrigued to see if the Rams going against this Texans defense, how they look in week one. That's going to be a good matchup.
That's one of the best matchups of week one for sure. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you live at Texans training camp. All right, there have been people out there over the course of the last few years that have one big criticism of Jim Crane. Does the Carlos Correa trade alleviate your criticism when it comes to this criticism of maybe the best owner in the history of the city? We'll have that for you coming up next.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Final segment, we'll hand it over to John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. The big news today is Carlos Correa is a Houston Astro once again. And if there's been one criticism of Jim Crane, Seth, in general, like aside from the really dark period where he decided to go without a GM, like just a general behavior as an owner, general methodology as an owner, it's been, hey, you spend, but when it comes time to spend big to keep our guys, you don't do that. And you brought this up multiple times this morning, and I think this is a classic example of Jim Crane being really smart about the way he goes about his business. I want him to stay out of the $200 million, $300 million, the 10- and 12-year contract pool. I don't need him swimming around in there, especially when he clearly shows the willingness to spend. Whether it's guys that used to be here or not, he's very opportunistic. The Christian Walker contract is TBD still for me. You know, let's see how this season ends. It's trending in the right direction. The only contract he's given out that I have that ultimately in retrospect you look back at Montero, but that's an $11 million reliever. The Abreu contract was an abomination, just an abomination, and still that was only a 3-year deal. You know, it didn't bury you.
The thing about Crane is that he typically, for the tier of teams that he's in financially, he's spending at the top end of those.
Yes.
You're never going to compete with the Yankees or the Dodgers. They make the Yankees make 50% more revenue than the Astros do. It's just that the Astros don't have the same ability to spend up and over and into the luxury tax. But when it comes to the rest of the league, like the people that are upper middle class, he's pretty consistently in that top set of teams. Think about all the guys, if they had re-signed them at face value, going back to Springer and, Correa and everybody else, that puts you up into Yankeesville, which you financially cannot do. It gets frustrating, I think, where sometimes people try to paint Crane out as a cheap owner, and I'm like, I look at the salaries for the team spending every year, and they're consistently in the top five, and the Yankees, the Mets, who have an incredibly rich owner who's just willing to spend anything and everything, like, doesn't make any sense at all. You're not going to compete with those teams, nor should you, because you would bankrupt the team.
Yep. I do think it's interesting, too, as we're celebrating the return of Carlos Correa, I think it is, before we finish up the show, I think it is wild to point out that Carlos Correa in 2021, when he hit free agency, was thought to be easily one of the best free agents, if not one of the best players in baseball. He had a top five MVP finish. Players like that, when they get put on the trade block, I'll take Juan Soto as an example. When he got traded from the Nationals to the Padres, they traded seven prospects, a lot of them good prospects, for Juan Soto. This is a sign of kind of where Carlos has been as a player throughout the course of the last 4 years since leaving here, that he really didn't get traded for anything. I mean, they throw in this 26-year-old reliever who's playing A-ball, who's not even a draft pick of the Astros. They signed him off the street. He's got a 7 ERA. This is one of those trades that felt like the Twins and the Astros are sitting there, and the Astros are just getting ready to fleece the Twins, and the Twins are like, you got to give me some – you got to give me a player. I don't care who. Mikulski. We'll take Mikulski. Because Carlos is now a guy – the 2021 Carlos would have been a guy that if the Twins are putting him on the trade block, he is the crown jewel of this trade deadline, and they're getting five good prospects for him. He is now a player – that, now, granted, he had the no-trade clause also, so he had control, yeah. So I should point that out. But and so the Twins had very little leverage. But the Twins were willing to dump him for an A-level reliever and pay $33 million to get rid
right.
of him.
Paying his salary is a big part of it. And it's cool, too, if everything comes full circle now, where in 2017, you're bringing in – let's bring in guys that can teach our guys how to win a championship and how to be veterans. So you bring in Brian McCann and Carlos Beltran. Now you're bringing back your own guys who are in a category above Brian McCann or Carlos Beltran.
Yeah.
And kind of doing the same thing. Like, hey, who can we get to come in and really show these young guys how the Astros can win a championship? I've got an idea.
Yeah.
How about Justin Verlander? Yeah. And how about Carlos Correa himself?
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't get Charlie Morton. That would have made sense as well.
Charlie got traded to the Tigers, right?
Yeah.
I saw he reunited with A.J. Hinch. I would have loved to have brought Charlie Morton back. That would have been good. I think the fact that there are no pitchers that they brought in, I think is – oh, it's an indication of two things. A, the price of poker to get pitchers, which Dana Brown cited yesterday. But I do think that it is an indication that they feel pretty good about at least a couple of these guys coming back and rounding out that rotation for the Astros.
And even if, I'm crossing my fingers as I say this, we haven't heard of setbacks like we had been so often with the pitchers who are coming back from injury.
Yeah.
And even if... even without feeling really good about any one guy individually, it's that when you've got this many guys coming back, all of whom are, you know, have been better than the guys that have been replacing them, at least one or two of them are going to work out.
Yeah.
Most likely.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And the other part about these trades for Urias and Correa, you're bolstering an already really good infield defense. You're making it that much better. So whatever your pitching issues are, whatever your offensive issues are, one of the things that's really sustained the Astros this year to the point where it doesn't make any sense that they've won as many games as they have, it's because they're so good defensively.
Well, think about the lineup they've been trotting out there lately, too, since Paredes' injury, and obviously Yordan's essentially been out all year. When he was playing, he wasn't good. So they've been missing Yordan for essentially the entire season. They've been missing Peña. You're all of a sudden, Seth, going to be trotting a lineup out there this weekend that has you're upgrading from whatever it was before. You're upgrading to Jeremy Peña, all-star, Carlos Correa. We know what's in there with Carlos. It's a matter of going and finding the best version of himself. And Jesus Sanchez, who at the very least is a capable left-handed big league bat that can keep passing the baton when you've got a rally going in an inning. You know, he's got a 740 OPS. For parts of the season with the Astros lineup, we would call that a unicorn. A 740 OPS, you know, like it's so they're the great job by Dana Brown and going and getting these upgrades for the everyday lineup. Feel good. And Boston's playing good baseball right now. Like they need to go in this weekend as full force as they can be. Hunter and Framber are both going to take the mound. This is going to be a very interesting series this weekend with the pickups the Astros have made. You got both of your aces going in this series. And Boston is one of the hottest teams in the American League right now. They're 18-7. In their last 25 games. So they're playing some really, really good baseball right now. The Red Sox are. We've had a big summer, man. Like, we in the last like 3 weeks, we've had Carlos Correa and Kevin Durant get traded. Like, these have been gifts from the gods when it comes to radio.
They are, you know, when it comes to radio and just people getting excited. I mean, people get excited about trades. It's one of the things that just it drives focus. You get any kind of trade news, people click on it, and it's because the Astros have had such success with it in the past.
Yeah,
it's multiplied with the Astros and their fan base. I think it's that, man, we've seen this time and time again, that whether it's a Greinke, a Verlander, whomever else, they've made some really impactful moves and end up being part of championship baseball.
Which one are you, like, I don't have an answer to this, so maybe I'm putting you on this. I'm trying to think of which one I was more excited about when I heard it, the Durant trade or the Correa trade. You know, and I mean, they're obviously very different. Like, Durant is still a peak-level player and a global icon. Carlos Correa has that local love here, the hometown guy returning.
They were both similar in that I had talked myself out of wanting it. I had almost, just as a protective measure, as a defense mechanism, I had said, we don't need to do that. We'll be fine. And then it happened, and I could see that I was a fraud. Both of those things happened. I think Durant, just because of the enormity of it, and because it's a different situation, you know, for where the Rockets are right now. And obviously the Astros have a lot of youth and uncertainty on the roster, but they've also won a couple World Series and been to four World Series et cetera, et cetera. I was more excited about the Durant one.
Yeah,
if I had to power rank it.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. Like, with the Astros, it feels like this is a move that's just going to allow them to kind of keep their head above water in the short term because they're so banged up and injured. I know there's three more years of this deal after this, but in the moment, whereas Kevin Durant feels like one, like, there is a specific beast you're going to slay in the NBA, and it's Oklahoma City. And Durant feels like he's the acquisition that put those two teams on a different level than everybody else.
This is the difference, Sean. I think I was more excited about the Durant trade, but the Correa trade feels better.
Yeah.
It's like the difference between having relations with a woman for the first time versus reuniting with a girlfriend where it was always awesome in the past, and you know exactly what she likes and vice versa.
Yeah.
When you're making out.
Right. Hadn't seen her in a while, and you go to the 5-year reunion, and there she is right there. Yeah, yeah.
That's what Korea is.
He's the 5-year
20th reunion. Year, 20th high school reunion hookup.
That's it. Except it's going to last for 3 years. The party's going to go for 3 more years.
And you're not going to destroy your respective families with it either.
Correct. Yeah, correct. all right. Practice getting started in about an hour. About to pass the baton to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. Seth, the next time I see you will be in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia.
In West Virginia.
Can't wait.
We'll meet in West Virginia.
Just like we drew it up on the chalkboard, baby.
Every great crate caper begins with that. We'll meet in West Virginia.
Yes.
Rob a bank while we're there, Sean.
And Deliverance. That begins there as well. All right. We are done. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and a Correa to you.
Thank you. I'll see you on Sunday.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.